Namaste. So today we reflect upon festivals as part of the Sanatana Dharma series. India, as we know, is often called as the land of festivals. Of course, festivals make life very charming and full of joy, gaiety. This is something warm, which is something very wonderful. But we also need to understand how they originated, what is at its core, so that we are not just blindly continuing something. Blind continuation is like, as I keep saying, parrot can do a mantra all his life, but parrot doesn't realize whatever truth is contained in the mantra. So we as human beings are supposed to at least go to the depth, to the core, to the height of things, and do whatever we do consciously. That's how the mother would say that in one of her talks to the children, that you come to the samadhi, you bow down. Are you conscious why you are doing it? So the same applies to festivals. And if you look at the festivals in India, all of them, suppose everywhere, festivity is everywhere. But in India, there are many more. And there is a difference between festivity and a festival. We see, for example, Diwali. Diwali is the festival of lights, as it is called by some, which is going to come. But the festival of light is not only unique to India. In Japan, it is celebrated in another name somewhere in August. It is celebrated in China as the Lantern Festival. It is celebrated in Thailand. It is celebrated in Netherlands. It's celebrated in different parts of the world, in Mexico. And on that particular day in France, it is a wonderful celebration. It is dedicated to Mother Mary. So if you really look at it, this is not unique to India. But what is unique to India is that with every festival, there is the outer celebration. Along with that, there is a story, and along with that, there is a puja, a whole ritual act. So festival is a package. It's not just about like Holi playing colors. No, Holi is not just about colors. There will be a story, a couple of stories behind Holi. There will also be a puja one day before, you know, we have the Holika Dehan. So all these aspects of a festival or human life are intertwined. So what really are these aspects? If you look at any aspect of life, the deepest is always the spiritual. That is the core. And we can say that what is the deepest spiritual is the truth. Just the truth behind anything. For instance, one can say that what is holy? Holy is celebrating unity in diversity. It's a truth. You can celebrate it in countless ways. You don't need to do holy. Like in Auroville, they have this 1st January, something very beautiful, they have a bonfire. Or on 28th February, they have this bonfire and people from all diverse places come and gather together. So, in one word, it's celebrating unity in diversity. Again, truth of Diwali is what? It is victory of light over darkness. So, this is the essence, truth. Then there are, next to that level, psychological and occult aspects of any story, of a legend, of the celebration. And then finally there are the physical aspect, the outermost ritual which is associated. And many of these festivals and the pujas, if you see really very interestingly, they are connected to some Puranic legends in the Puranas, and many of them derive their truths from tantras. People often speak about Tantra and they talk about its disrepute. And if you go to a philosophical setting, it is all about Vedanta. But in Tantra, you will see all these rituals, all these puja. And the reason is very simple. See, in Vedanta, you want to realize the One. So you ultimately can, in the highest reach of Vedanta of a certain kind, not the ultimate Vedanta, what Sri Aurobindo speaks about, reconciling God and creation, creator and creation, but a line of Vedanta where you reach a bare peak of the mind and from there you discard the whole apparatus. It doesn't matter. So ritual, festivals, everything is meaningless at that level. Yes, but the moment you enter into manifestation and creation, then you need to understand the powers, the forces and everything that has gone into it. That's when all this begins to assume a meaning. So many of these festivals, you will see some god or goddess associated with it. So let's try to understand to begin with, what are these? Many people are, so many gods and goddesses. In India, you will see a goddess dedicated to everything. So what are gods and goddesses? They are many aspects of the one. Gods and goddesses, many of them do not negate the one. They complement the one. And in modern science, it's very easy to understand from a very simple scientific analogy. Source of this material universe, is it one or many? Somebody would say it's foolish to put this question because logically it has to be one. All right. So there is one power that has gone into material universe. Now, but is there sameness? No, there is variety. There are countless objects. Each object, does it have a specific function, its own force field, its own place in the creation? Yes. Its own unique place? Yes. Now, if we apply this analogy to creation in the largest sense, then we have the same answer. The difference is that when we speak about material creation, we generally begin to believe that material creation is governed by purely mechanical, unconscious forces. But when we apply it to creation in general, it is the limit of our sight that creates only, looks at creation as only material. Then we say that there are several independent, seemingly independent, just like there are objects, but there is nothing independent. Just as there are different centers of condensation of matter and material energy, there are different centers or knots, energy knots of conscious force. The only difference is this is unconscious, and in spiritual science we say that the origin is conscious force. And this is more logical, because if it is all unconscious force, then we cannot explain consciousness. How has it emerged? Okay. But if we understand it is conscious force, we can understand it can become unconscious. That is understandable by its own self-involution. So gods and goddesses are nothing but multiple energy centers. They are not just centers. They are conscious centers or half-conscious centers. Beings, not just forces, through which the one transmits the entire complex chain of power into different places. Just like, if you ask in a tap, where is the water coming from? So you will point to your tanki. Is it coming from the tank? No. It is coming through the tank. Or take the example of light. Where is the light coming from? Those who are using solar, this thing. So you will say, oh, through these panels, from the panels. You say, is it really? No, it is from the sun. So similarly, you can keep tracing the water right up to the water body, and even water body you can go further and further. So same way, the one mighty force which no object can really bear or tolerate, that comes through number of channels, till in our tap it becomes a trickle. But that is good for us, good enough for us, because supposing there is a mighty avalanche of that force, we will get broken. So that's how all these little china gods and goddesses came into play, who give us things which we ask for, which are very simple, very material for our everyday life. And if that be all our demand, that I want little money, I want to get rid of this illness, I want that, then it's okay. These gods and goddesses are fine. But if our demand grows, supposing you say that I am not happy with 20 gallons of water per day, I need thousands of gallons, then what will they say? This will not suffice. You have to find another source or build a larger reservoir. So when the demand grows in the human heart, not just for material gains, but for higher gains, psychological, spiritual gains, higher wealth, then you have to go from this little goddess to the original goddess, whom this is a little reflection or little representation. And one of the clear examples is Goddess Lakshmi. We are going to, now in India, everybody prays to Lakshmi on Diwali. I don't know how this tradition on Diwali has come, because originally Lakshmi Puja is on full moon night. And why it is on full moon night? Because she is the goddess of plenitude. Look at the symbol, interweaving of symbols. She is the goddess of plenitude. What is plenitude? Plenitude is inner wealth. And what are these inner wealths? Now it's very interesting. If you read, if you see the mother symbol, we have 12 and 4, the 4 aspects and the 12 outer, right? And if you go back to the ancient Indian tradition, what is plenitude, which can be really regarded as this is the real wealth. If you have it, you have the fullness of divinity within a human being. It is called as 16 kalas. And who embodied it is Krishna. So Krishna becomes the benchmark of a perfect human being who embodies all these 16 forms through which the one expresses himself. Then, of course, there are different ways of understanding, but we are just sticking to one line of thought. The point here is that if you want outer wealth, then you pray on Deepavali night. It's very interesting. I find this symbol very interesting. Why? Because this wealth will possess you rather than you will possess. So what do people do? Typically on Deepavali night, they pray to Goddess Lakshmi and then they play mandatory gambling. These are facts. We must understand that these are distortions. But what it means is this is the outer wealth. Why it is mandatory to play gamble? It's very strange. You can't imagine. It's almost mandatory in northern parts of India. Why it is mandatory? To teach you and train you. No justification for it. It should stop. Outer wealth can be won and lost. It's like that. You have it, you will lose it tomorrow. And for that, on the dark night, Deepavali, you have Lakshmi Puja. I always used to find it very strange. Till I discovered that the original Lakshmi Puja is on the full moon night, which is what, how here you have. In ashram, you have on Lakshmi Puja on the full moon night. Isn't it? And Kali Puja on the dark night. Now you see the symbol. Kali Puja on the dark night, Amavasya, when Deepavali lamps are lighting, is very symbolic. It's symbolic that even in the thick of darkness, we can always light a lamp of hope and aspiration. At a very outer level, a symbol is there. And why it is Kali? Because Kali comes in the darkness, robed in the darkness. What we are perceiving as darkness, what we are perceiving as the end of whole existence, she will come and give it a new beginning. It's a beautiful symbol. It's the night of Kali. Because the same divine will is robed in night, in darkness. This is not the color of Kali. It is just a symbol that she comes robed in darkness as Shama to destroy, not only destroy darkness, but to use the cover of darkness to change time. What is darkness after all? Every night, it is like it. All the many things of today which are hanging on like little, you know, unhappy, uncomfortable. What happens in the next morning? It's okay. Life moves to another dimension, another day, isn't it? So this is a very beautiful symbol. So behind the physical ritual, there is a symbol. That's the day of Kali. What about the true plenitude? True plenitude of Goddess Lakshmi is not this Lakshmi which we are praying, but the Mahalakshmi. Mahalakshmi brings inner wealth. That is how Mother and Sri Aurobindo beautifully described to us, that revealed to us that who is Mahalakshmi. When Mother was asked that can Mahalakshmi be there in the heart of a poor man, she said yes, she can be there, bless a poor man with plenitude of the riches of the spirit. Now why this is higher? If you have inner plenitude, you may or may not have an outer wealth, it doesn't matter. You are a happy person. You are a harmonious person. You are living with the sense of beauty, love. You don't really need it. If you have it, wonderful. If you don't have it, it's wonderful. But if you have only outer plenitude riches and don't have the inner plenitude, then you are a slave and subject to these things. So look at, the same festival, how it carries different meanings. But it is not just about meaning. It is about something else. We'll come to that. Then comes, as I said, these gods and goddesses are conscious forces, like Kali Day. Now, Kali Puja, the Kali that we adore, Nimund Malini, that we have already spoken about, Sri Aurobindo has said, the true Kali is not this color. She is of a golden hue. She is a goddess of the overmind. But her action is the same, but the means are different. Now, Kali on the vital plane whom we worship, what does she do? She destroys our ego. Now people often when they worship Kali, they don't know what they are inviting. Because she is not going to spare you just because you are her worshipper. She will strike at you the frontal blow and you are gone. You can't harbor asuric tendencies and pray to Kali. That's why I think maybe while in Bengal still Kali worship is there. But in many parts of the northern India now it's all substituted by Lakshmi worship. Because Kali is too strong a goddess. But Mahakali will also do the same thing. Destroy your ego. But how? By the divine love. which is a very different, very tremendous. You will be compelled to give up your ego because you are face to face with that tremendous divine love. So now look at all these symbols interwoven in the story. Let's take another very interesting story on the day of Deepavali as it's drawing near. As we know, Deepavali was a means also to socially and culturally connect the whole of India. So you have in the northern states, it is celebrated as the day of Rama's return to Ayodhya. By the way, that's not the day. It is supposed to be April, the Chaitra Mas. But anyway, it's celebrated. Well, Victory Day is... No, logically you think... I mean, Victory Day was on the 10th day, Dashmi, no? Dashera. Then 20 days after Dashera, that is Deepavali. So, that's how. But it is connected, which is fine. But in the southern states, it is the victory of Krishna over Narkasur, which is a very fascinating legend. Now, this is also integrated in the northern sides. So, we have Choti Deepavali, which is the day of Narka Chaturdashi. Now, what do we do in Narka Chaturdashi? See how these are very symbolic acts. We used to dread that. Now, moms used to keep water from the well for 3 days. Okay, so it's pretty cold. Huh? 3 days it's inside a matka. The well water inside a matka. That's how we used to have it. On Narka Chaturdasi, you were supposed to take a bath with that water. Not full bath, but pour it over the head and wash. Now, I mean, it's something, why are you torturing? But when you understand the whole sequence, just like in Vedas, through symbols, they were revealing great truths. If you were an initiate and a yogi, you got the truth. If we are just doing the book reading, you will never understand the truth. Here, the truth was preserved in the heroic age through the Puranic legends. The same truth is preserved through the Puranic legends. Now, let's understand this story of Narka Chaturdashi, which is celebrated in the southern states as the day of Diwali. There are many other stories, by the way. Sikh religions celebrate Diwali, Bandi Utsav when Guru Gobind Singh was freed. Buddhism, it is celebrated in one part of Buddhism as the day of enlightenment. Then there are several regions, sects and cults in India when Deepavali is celebrated. So it's also a day when you create a sense of unity, social and cultural unity. Even it is supposed to be the day when Vamana pushed Bali down into the ground. So again, a surrender of the ego to the Lord. But let's come to just this one legend because I find it very fascinating. All legends are fascinating. So the story goes that Narkasur, he is the son of Lord Vishnu in his Varaha avatar. So when he came as a Varaha, so it is said, I'll modify the legend because it said one sweat, drop of sweat fell on Bhu and there was the birth of Narkasur from Bhudevi. Bhudevi is Mother Earth. But if you look at the story, it is the divine incarnate in a form, the wild boar. And he comes and the moment he comes in contact with earth, out of that union, who is first born? The Asura. Now he is not Asura to start with. He is a being, creature who is born. He is still having, you know, has a whole life to go. And he is given this command. He is Bhudevi's putra. And Lord Vishnu, because he's in Varaha avatar, and he tells him that, look, you will have all the... Bhudevi says, give him all the powers and everything. You are his dad. He says, yes, I give him all the powers. But look here, son. He cautions him. Don't misuse these powers. Don't follow the path of Adharma. Otherwise, you will be damned. So he says, okay, for some time he follows. And he says, okay, I'll follow Dharma. Who will protect me? He says, my tusk will protect you. So one of the tusks of Vara is given to him. So he's a good guy, basically. He starts like that. All things start like that. And for a long time, he goes on like a good guy. Then after, you know, by the time it is Dwapar age, now power begins to fall on his head. All the Kshatriyas are getting destroyed. Shri Krishna has come. He starts doing all kinds of things which he's... Because, you know, absolute power. And basically, it's a time has come for him to give way to another age. So Narkasur rules for a long time. And power, he is so maddened by power that he starts conquering heaven, earth. And he does the most audacious of all acts. He goes and steals Mother Aditi's kundal. That's the story. So he steals Divine Mother's kundal once and runs away. So Divine Mother says, what is this? He's your son, Lord Vishnu. That's why I have spared him. But he says, don't worry, I'm going down on earth as Krishna and I'm going to sort it out. So he comes as Krishna Now, who is Krishna? He is Lord Vishnu's incarnation. And Satyabhama, who is one of the consorts of Sri Krishna, is Bhudevi's incarnation. Now, you see, it's a very fascinating story when you look at the symbolic aspect. So, they come and they have a fight with Narkasur. There is a cause. He has, taken 16,000 women and stolen them and kept in his hell kind of a place and, made them his wives or just the story. Then I'll explain the deeper sense. So, they go and complain. Even Mother Aditi comes and tells Satyabhama that, do something about it. She's enraged. And then Shri Krishna and Satyabhama go and have a fight. So it's very beautifully described. Narak, hell. So he has become Narakasur. Now, initially he is not Asura. Asura is the name, comes later. Initially it is Narak. Means human life is like that when it first came on earth. But later on it becomes a power in its own right. Dark power. And so there are four layers in which he is hidden. So all that is a graphic description. I am not going into it. But Shri Krishna goes on Garuda. So what is Garuda? Garuda, as we know, is the power that destroys the hostile beings. Because Garuda eats away snakes. So he is going with that into that realm which is full of hostile beings. And then there he destroys one famous asura called Mura. You know how Shri Krishna is, one of the names is Murari. So Murari comes from that. Mura. Ari is Shatru. So he is the destroyer of evil. So that is one of the names that comes to him. So this is how he comes, goes, and finally there is a fight. Now in that fight, Narkasur, last desperate, he uses that tusk, his own power, Lord Vishnu's power onto Shri Krishna. And for a moment even, Shri Krishna is sort of, paralyzed. He doesn't know what to do now. It's a tremendous power, no? Vara, that brute power which was released upon earth by none else but his own previous incarnation. So when this happens, Satyabhama takes charge. And she shoots arrows and he doesn't know where to stand. By then, Shri Krishna comes out of his swoon and with his Sudarshan Chakra destroys Narkasur. The 16,000 women are released and they marry Shri Krishna. That's how the 16,000 wives of Shri Krishna come. This is the framework of the legend. There is another legend associated with Shri Krishna and Satyabhama. Let us hear that also, then see the meaning, how deep it is. So the other legend is that once of both Shri Krishna and Satyabhama. Now remember, Satyabhama is Bhudevi. She is Mother Earth. And Shri Krishna is the divine. Look at the coming together. And once Shri Krishna gives a flower which is found only in heaven, Parijat, to Rukmini. And when he gives to Rukmini, because Rukmini is Lakshmi herself. She is the incarnation of Goddess Lakshmi. But Bhudevi, Satyabhama, comes to know Narada, the celestial demigod, ki look here, you didn't receive that flower. So she says, okay, doesn't matter, I'll ask for something greater. So she asks Sri Krishna for the tree itself. So Sri Krishna says, okay, I'll get the tree. So Sri Krishna goes to heaven, where this Parijat tree is there, breaks a twig, and starts coming to plant it upon earth. Very fascinating. I'll come to that story. Huh? Just keep the suspense. So then Indra doesn't like it. Oh, there is a fight. He says, this is only for heaven. How can you have it on earth? But Shri Krishna ultimately defeats the gods, brings it, plants on earth. So there are many small little legends associated which are very interesting. So Bhudevi, now both want the tree. So, because Rukmini says this is not fair, so he plants the tree, it seems, in Satyabhama's side, but the flowers reach out to Rukmini. Now this is all very beautiful symbol. I'll come to that. I found it very, very fascinating. And there is another mythological story about Parijat, that's what is it called, Ratki Rani. So the story is that basically it is a tree which loved the sun. But they were never supposed to meet. So whole night she is shedding tears. And in the morning the sun comes. Now what is the symbol of this story and the story of Narkasur? Let's come to Narkasur's story. Now the subconscient, Narak, those many energies which were meant for good purposes, feminine energies, the 16,000 powers coming from the 16 kalas, all the miniature things born out of the fullness and plenitude, they are all going into hell regions. Take for instance one of the power, goodness. Mother speaks about this, which is and part of the original plenitude. Peace. All of them are diverted into purposes which are very dark, and they go into hell. And one of the tasks of the avatar is to release these energies. Why? Because man's progress cannot take place if they remain locked in the subconscious. And how do you understand it? When you read through Mother's agenda, there is a great battle in the subconscious she keeps fighting. Now when you know this story, you understand, oh, she's releasing all these energies. Why is she releasing? They are meant, ultimately they are all deviating energies which have deviated from their original purposes, but they belong to the Divine Mother. It is part of her work to release all these energies and integrate them once again with the divine life. So slaying Narakasura is basically entering into the subconscious, finishing the reign of the subconscious and releasing all these feminine energies, all these energies once again for the good of man. So you see, and how they will, these energies have to be wedded once again to the Lord. They have gone away from their purposes. So the marriage of these 16,000 feminine energies to Sri Krishna is that all of them go back to their origin. And when they are completely integrated, there is the divine life. Another condition for that is, for that progress toward divine life is that Sri Krishna, the divine incarnate, and Bhudevi as Satyabhama, they must come together. Why does Sri Krishna take her? See, in no other battle you will find this kind of thing. Sri Krishna is alone capable of, you know, meting out the Asura. But he takes Satyabhama. This very clear symbolic. And there he has to tackle even his power which has been once released upon earth. The tusk is a part of his power which was given once for man to progress. But now it has become evil because over a period of time it is brute force, the tusk given to man to progress. But at that time when man needed brute force to counter the animals and everything around, becomes a danger to his own existence. So it has to become more and more subtle. So nowadays we speak about soft powers. What are the soft powers? Compassion, kindness, they, you know, to turn around people through that. So, but still that power which was released by the divine turns against him. Now see how, what has happened to many of these religions? Even many of these rituals which were meant to at one point open a road have become counterproductive, because man worships outwardly Goddess Lakshmi, but in his heart he denies her. So that is another aspect, we'll come to that. But this is the story of Narakasura, which is so symbolic and significant. What about Parijat? You have the key when you know the name given to it by the mother. What is the name given to it by mother? Aspiration. Now you see, aspiration, Shobhinda literally uses the word, this reference to this story comes indirectly in Savitri. In one place he says, an aspiration in the nights profound. When there is ignorance, it's same Yajnavalk, when the sun is not there, when the moon is not there, what is it that lights up man's life? Fire. Aspiration is in the night. When there is a supramental creation, you don't need it. It has fulfilled its purpose. So we have, like love. Love's purpose is to unite. When there is identification, love has served its purpose. Then you may, for the joy of separating and uniting, keep it. But it has served its purpose. So aspiration flowers bloom at night. And in the morning, they are on the earth. What they have done? Enriched the soil and opened it to the sun. So beautifully symbolic. Now this aspiration is not found upon earth. It is there in heaven as a, you know, where they don't really need it because there is all light. So what is it bringing that tree and planting? We have another line in Savitri. A branch of heaven transplant to human soil. Look at so many places these myths and legends are interwoven in Savitri. When the great boon is given by the Divine Mother. A seed shall be planted in death's tremendous hour. A branch of heaven transplanted to human soil. So this is the branch of heaven. This aspiration is what is a gift from grace. It is not something innate. But yet this is the bridge. in the night, what is that given to us? Often people say, oh, somebody was born with nothing. Look, God has been very unkind. No. There is something given to each one which can build everything. And that is aspiration. Aspiration has two sides, light and warmth. So there is hope, the first light. Hope gives you the effort, renewed energy. The first stir of aspiration is hope. Then you have faith and will when it begins to differentiate. Then you have knowledge and power. The same aspiration climbs very consciously. So you see the story of Parijat, which he steals, is so beautiful. Even this little detail, planted on earth, Satyabhama, fruits reaching the heavens, the flowers. It doesn't bear fruits, by the way. It bears flowers. So flowers are going to Rukmani. So what is the power of this tree? When planted on earth, it can take you right to the high realms, to the abode of the Lord himself, towards the plenitude that it's supposed to bring. Even nature reproduces the symbol. So when you see the tree dropping the flowers, have you seen how the flowers land up? They land up like this, as if it's a little diya base and that orange stem or stalk, little. So if you really see it from a distance, it looks like little flames. So now when you look at the story in this way, it is something wonderful. But now comes the but. Now most people are happy with the story, or they will explain it in a very weird symbolic manner. It is a victory of good over evil. Now how many stories you will have of good over evil? You had Dasahara, good over evil. Dasahara story is not victory of good over evil. It's conversion of the Asura. That's how one has to look at it. Because Ravana in his origin is not evil. In his origin he is a celestial being. He is fallen. Out of compassion, his master, Lord Vishnu, for a promise that he remembers, but Ravana has forgot. He and his divine consort come. The time has come to bring our child back. When you look at it as a conversion of the Asura, the story carries a much greater meaning than the victory of good over evil. Same way Deepavali, when we look at it, it's the day when the subconscious nature, and that's why the next day there is this breaking through of splendor and light. Because one day before, an event that is an inner event of light, which is being described, that when you have burst forth into the subconscious, all these energies, what does it mean practically? Psychological aspect, that have you noticed that all the good resolutions, why they fail? Habitually, mechanically, things will spring up and pull you down. Why? That is the action of the subconscious. You have good, I'll never tell a lie. Morning you have the resolve, if at all people have this resolve. By evening they catch themselves telling a lie. Out of habit, they habitually. They don't want to do it, but habitually. So subconscious has to be clean. Now when it is cleaned one day before, next day you have the bursting forth of cracker, that what if there is the densest darkness, after that cleansing is the inconscient night, after which there is the changeover. So when you look at it like that, the symbol becomes so beautiful and clear. And very interestingly, in that whole process, again that little detail, now I understood much later that why my mom used to keep that 3 days stale water into the kumbhak. Stale water becomes cold. That is what subconscious is. All the stale things. It was fresh when it was taken out. All these energies which were fresh, which were needed at one point of time, has entered into subconscious. Now surely doing it mechanically, the age is past when we should do it mechanically. That time is gone. Doing it mechanically means to preserve something for somebody else. Doing it mechanically means that somebody who is does not know the value of a book, but his only act is to print and bind. There are many people like that. No, take out Ramayana, Mahabharata, many books, Shivinda's books, they are going to press and then press people. And then it is bound and it comes. Now imagine if you ask the person who has printed Ramayana, tell me something about it. He'll describe it like this typically. It has so many pages. It is so many slokas. That detail he will know. And he'll tell you all the outer details. Published where, when was it first, because he knows all of them. Tell him, okay, that's fine, sir. I want to know the inner meaning. Inner meaning will remain hidden. So one can choose to become just a preserver of a book. That's how these traditions have been preserved. Or you can choose to discover the inner truth and grow by that. When you discover the inner truth, the core, then you don't need this at all. In fact, this becomes counterproductive. And that's what we will see now with this final thing. Lakshmi Pujan is there, no? So how do you pray Lakshmi? There is the mantra and there is the puja. So there is a lot of emphasis on puja. When mother was asked that, you know, divine beings, worship and all, you know, people wanted to do that to her also. She said, do you really believe that a divine being enjoys all this? The lower beings will, because they are very happy. They are actually more than happy, they are amused. Human beings, oh, what are they doing? It's like sometimes you see, you know, little dogs just now, you know, they were playing. You feel amused, isn't it? They may be poor fellows, pretty serious in what they are doing. But you feel amused about the whole thing. And then you walk away. If they try to brush past you too closely, then what do? The gesture is, oh, don't come too near. So with these divine beings, they may feel amused for a moment. But if you start doing all kinds of jing-bang, noise and all this, they may say, what kind of nonsense is this? And they may withdraw from you. Because the divine beings are not at your mercy. You can't really tie them with little puja, little diagrams, yantra and mantra. They will come. But out of their joy, they may come. If you are a true bhakta, they may come. But if you start, then when you call a divine being, one has to be very clear what you are in for. Imagine if Goddess Lakshmi, you invite her in your house. 5 minutes before the puja, there is fight and quarrel. During the puja, there is further fight and quarrel. Why are you putting so much ghee? And after the puja, there is more fight and quarrel. That, you know, you wasted so much time. Now what will happen, this, that. Then if true Goddess Lakshmi comes, he will turn away. So we don't realize that it's one thing to call these divine beings. It's not easy to keep them near. And if really once for a change a true divine being comes. That's why mother says, if I was born in India at that time, I would have smashed many things. So we should be very careful when we do these things. Even some of these beings which you call for healing and all these purposes. They are Shudra Devta, not the great gods. You call them, okay, I'll heal. Now what they do is, they are happy that they are receiving something from you. They will come annually. Okay, now give me my this thing. Now then you get tied to them in a kind of slavery, relation of a slave to these beings. That's why while these pujas have a deeper meaning, it is time. That's why you'll see something very interesting. Shrubinda and the mother, they've just released truths from all of these things. And while in Puranic tradition, even in Vedic traditions, even as late as a great sage, saint like Sri Ramakrishna, he has used parables and stories, isn't it? Have you ever wondered why Mother and Shrubinda have not used it like this? Subtly towards the later, some parables they have used here and there and just released. But generally they have not. Why? Because they are complete truth. So even a parable is after all an analogy. It is not the real thing. So what mother has done, if you read the stories told by the mother, not the stories retold, that tale of all times is different. Please, that is a collection of stories by the mother. It's very different. People pass it on as mother's story. Recently I was seeing on one of the group that mother is writing about some, you know, what happened in Muhammad's life. They're collection of stories. It's not volume 2, you have tales of all time. These are not stories told by the mother. They are stories collected by the mother. And somehow it came through, people picked it up and thought her stories and they have published. She said, okay, but you know, it's a different thing. But read mother's stories. Mother picks up life experiences and gives surreal lessons. Story of the Alexandra David Neal, story of the cobra, story of the scientist in a zoo, story of the charity bazaar. Take any story. They are organic. They are not like legends kind of stories. Why she has done? Because this is consistent with the age. It's an age of truth. If you tell children that, you know, there was Narkasur and you destroyed and there were 16,000. Either they want to know the meaning. And when you tell them the meaning, they'll say, why do I need the story? You don't need it because you know now the meaning. Once you know what it means to have victory. But You need it only because in the outer frame. See, there was the purpose of these stories and rituals and festivity was the innermost truth is preserved in the outer frame and expresses itself. But now even this expression needs to change because it has become subject to, because truth needs a body. So what was the outer frame in which this great Kali Puja and Lakshmi Puja were celebrated? Through these outer means. But now you have to manifest it in very different way. Truth needs an outer body. So Lakshmiji needs an outer body, which means your house should be beautiful, harmony. It's not about having a palace. You may have a small hut, but when you have harmony of colors, blend of things in right proportion, when there is harmony amongst people who are living there, then it becomes the abode of Lakshmi. So you are giving it outer body, which means your speech should be pleasant, your speech should be such that it brings joy to everybody, it encourages and opens sweetness. But if the speech itself is harsh and quarrelsome, then what happens? Then it is Goddess Lakshmi. You may be invoking and praying to her, but you are giving an outer body which is not consistent with her. So now we are entering a new age when even the body that has to be given, that's how society will improve. Society will not improve if you keep on saying that, you know, we have to preserve the society and therefore these must continue. No. It has become a cause of evil. As I said, you know, playing, gambling after, you know, the Lakshmi Puja, it makes no sense. Mistreating your daughters while, you know, you're on another side, or women on the other side, you talk about Narkasur. Shri Krishna released all these women, Satyabhama fought for them. And then you say, you know, you're praying. But if you truly do worship in the true sense, and that's what the mother says, that beings of these greater order, what they want is a beautiful thought, a kind gesture, a noble feeling. They respond to that. If you have it, they will bless you. They will come near you. They'll even make your heart their abode. This is the inner sacrifice. And if you do it, they will be much more than happy. Then you don't have to even say by a certain name that I am praying to Mother Mahalakshmi. No, she's not like us. Have you called me by name? You called somebody else? No. They are Godheads, not just gods. They are vast, impersonal, cosmic powers. Wherever they see beauty and harmony, there they lean and bless. And when they do it, what is the effect? Not outer wealth and all. Magnetic is her touch, and where she presses her feet, course miraculous streams of an entrancing ananda. You will feel that sweetness, that joy inside. Why? Because Mother Mahalakshmi has come. We may use the word Mahalakshmi, wonderful. Because in India, names have their own Sanskrit. Names have their own meaning if you go back to the roots. But it doesn't matter. If somebody may not use the name, but he lives a life of beauty and harmony, she will still bless. She will not say that, no, he didn't know my name. And the sign of her coming will be, there will be joy, harmony, sweetness and true love. So we'll just quickly read, because it's both, what should be true puja, and it's important and incumbent that those who are awakening to this truth get rid of all this and wake up to the newer reality, because the age is changing. To perpetuate, now there are people who will perpetuate the past. Let them do it. There is no quarrel with that. That's why when mother was asked what should be our relation with the gods, she said general indifference and a luminous understanding. What is the general indifference? You don't have to worry about what whom people are praying, it their business, their level, their understanding. But a luminous understanding, what they are, what function they represent, and they are aspects and powers of the One. When you invoke the Divine Mother herself, all of them will come. You will see sometime that when you have Durga, you have those little other idols, no, by the side, Ganesha and Kartike. It is understood. When Divine Mother will come, obviously Mother Mahakali, Mother Mahalakshmi, Maheshwari, Mahasaraswati will come. They are not going to say that, no, there he has not called me. She will come, all of them will come as her consorts and her powers. So for us, it's become even more simple by just invoking the Divine Mother. We need nothing else, because then everything else is included in that. So we just read this little bit about Mahalakshmi, which we just crossed, but people still. How to worship her? Harmony and beauty. Shubhendu starts with this. Yet it is not easy to meet the demand of this enchanting power or to keep her presence. Look what he's saying. It's not easy to keep her demand. When she will come, it's not like you did a puja and there's the end of the story. She's coming. She has her own demands. There's a very nice bhajan by, I think, Dwijendralal Roy, which Shurvinder has translated. Or Anil Baran has translated. But very beautiful bhajan. Tumhe malinta nahi suhati, main malinya tajunga, satat poorn vidhi nishkalank hokar matme bhajunga. He's invoking the mother as Mahalakshmi. Ki you don't like ugliness. It's not just about ugliness. I will remove all stains from my being and become a stainless soul. Main malinya tajunga, satat poorn vidhi nishkalank ho. I'll get rid of all that stains my being. And then I will worship you and invoke you. This is puja. So we must understand that it is, and it's the task of all of us who are more conscious to lead humanity this way. Not that iconoclast who destroys everything in that one without a second, that Vedantin, no. Nor that blind, self-seeking, indulgent, ignorant forms of worship which are done as a superstitious ritual. Worse, I am doing a ritual but I don't care about the meaning. I am just following a tradition. We have to release the truth that is contained. These gods must be embodied in human consciousness. Krishna is the prototype of 16 kalas. All of us must become filled with that plenitude of all the 16 kalas which we find in Mother's symbol. So what is the demand? Harmony and beauty of the mind and soul. Try doing it. That half an hour puja is very easy. That's why in ashram we have Lakshmi puja. All the four new form has been given. Mother's darshan, pranam, aspiration. So what is the demand of Mahalakshmi? If you are calling, be careful. Harmony and beauty of the mind and soul. Harmony and beauty of the thoughts and feelings. Harmony and beauty in every outward act and movement. How you walk, how you give something, gesture, posture. How you speak. Everything is part of Mahalakshmi in every act. Now act also, you know, if you give something, Mother Mahalakshmi out of love will give something. No, so one is, take this. Another is, when you are giving, your heart is full of love and gratitude. When you are putting it in front of somebody, it is like an offering to the divine inside. It is not like, okay, I am giving it to you. And then, you know its cost? You know what it is? Remember, don't forget that I have given this to you. What is Mahalakshmi's way? Here it is, an offering to the divine. Harmony and beauty of the life and surroundings. Life includes everything. And the surroundings. So in India, we have forgotten Mahalakshmi, Ma Saraswati. Whatever outwardly we may profess. And so the result is that the goddesses they are standing back. They don't care. They will go to a Western country where they may not believe in all this, but they are caring about material objects. They will say, fine, this is worship. They are not interested that, you know, you have to take that name. Saraswati is the goddess of manifold learning. Look at the symbol of Saraswati Puja. You have the thawing and then blossoming of spring. So what is spring? Earth is receiving all the light from the sun and it turns it into manifold activity. Maheshwari is the light and Saraswati is manifold knowledge. One knowledge becomes manifold knowledge. So when we develop this kind of, you know, many-sidedness, not like I'm a doctor, I know about medicine. No, we must know many things. That's how we worship Mahasaraswati. Many-sidedness, many types of knowledge she pours. Harmony and beauty of the life and surroundings. This is the demand of Mahalakshmi. Where there is affinity to the rhythms of the secret world bliss and response to the call of the all beautiful and concord and unity and the glad flow of many lives turned towards the divine. In that atmosphere, she consents to abide. Yes. So, we may, all this yantra and puja is okay, But this is the, so Sri Aurobindo has released, made pujas so different. The conception of God, the truth of God, not conception. He has released it and made it psychologically intimate to our inner beings. That's how we have to worship. But all that is ugly and mean and base. Why I am praying? Fill my tijori so that I can become a rich man. Maybe she will say, take this, but I am tata bye bye. So you will never feel that joy and harmony. It is poverty inside, though you have seemingly riches outside. So we should not fall into trap of that. All that is poor, poor here is inner poverty. All that is poor and squalid and sordid and squalid, all that is brutal and coarse repels her advent. Where love and beauty are not or are reluctant to be born, she does not come. Where they are mixed and disfigured with baser things, she turns soon to depart or cares little to pour her riches. She sees that what kind of a life people are indulging in. Completely egoistic, selfish, mean, full of hatred, jealousies, possessiveness, all kinds of ugly things. What love and harmony has become, discord, fights, quarrels. She says, Mother Kali, your job. I'll quit. Let her come and do a clearing. Then we say, why did I got a blow? I did nothing. You did nothing. You just led a selfish life. You thought you are doing a good deal. That's how people think. I am filing all my income taxes in time. That's not the issue. I am having honest money. It's not about that. What were you doing with your money? Just amassing for your own sake. So there comes, you know, when Mahalakshmi recedes, Mahasaraswati will come in the end. Mahalakshmi recedes, Kali takes over. Next step. Have you seen the sequence? Okay. So Mahalakshmi Puja, then comes Kali Puja. Okay. Once Kali starts, only Shiva, Lord, 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 save me, can save you. Otherwise, she will smash everything to pieces. We may cry and say, what is this justice? Why God is doing it? Out of divine compassion, he is doing it. Out of tremendous power of love, he has given a blow. As Sri Aurobindo says in one of the aphorisms, if strike me if thou lovest me. If thou strikest me not, thou lovest me not. Because that is the love. When he says you can't get rid of it, okay, I am going to do it in one day. So this is the, and when she has done clearing, then Maheshwari's light pours in. Then Mahasaraswati is always the last. See, she is unique in the, then there is thawing. Last she will come and start filling all the details. So, if she finds herself in men's heart, surrounded with selfishness and hatred and jealousy and malignance and envy and strife, if treachery and greed and ingratitude are mixed in the secret chalice, the body is the secret chalice, if grossness of passion and unrefined desire degrade devotion, mother come, why? Because I want this unrefined ambition. That's why Sri Aurobindo says, if your faith and devotion are mixed with ambition, they are like a slow and smoke obscured flame that cannot burn upward to heaven. In such hearts, the gracious and beautiful goddess will not linger. A divine disgust seizes upon her and she withdraws, for she is not one who insists or strives, or veiling her face, she waits for this bitter and poisonous devil stuff to be rejected and disappear before she will found anew her happy influence. Ascetic bareness and harshness are not pleasing to her. Harshness of every kind. Ascetic bareness of every kind. Nor the suppression of the heart's deeper emotions. Surface emotions are all frivolous, but the deeper feelings that arise, she doesn't want us to suppress them. And the rigid repression of the soul's and the life's parts of beauty. For it is through love and beauty that she lays on men the yoke of the divine. And if she consents, then what happens? lives, life is turned in her supreme creations into a rich work of celestial art, and all existence into a poem of sacred delight. All our life becomes that. Into a poem of sacred delight. The world's riches are brought together and concerted for a supreme order, and even the simplest and commonest things are made wonderful by her intuition of unity and the breath of her spirit. Admitted to the heart, she lifts wisdom to pinnacles of wonder and reveals to it the mystic secrets of the ecstasy that surpasses all knowledge. When she enters the field of knowledge, it's not bare, cold, impersonal, shivoham, shivoham. Now Parvati has come. So Shiva opens his eyes and he begins to dance. He becomes Nataraj. Before that, it is shivoham, shivoham. Because the Divine Mother, when she is admitted to the heart, she will give you the wonder, with the delight that is hidden inside knowledge. Otherwise, you'll reach a cold, bare, impersonal, ascetic kind of knowing. And Shobhindu is using the word lifts it. Wisdom is lifted to pinnacles. Meets devotion with the passionate attraction of the divine. Teaches to strength and force the rhythm that keeps the might of their acts harmonious and in measure, and casts on perfection the charm that makes it endure forever. So let us invoke all these great goddesses in the true spirit. Let us come out of all these entanglements and webs into which Indian life is caught, and recover the ancient Vedanta, the ancient Tantra, the original truth, the original ineffable mystic tendencies of the Aryan spirit, as Shurvindu puts it. And then we will see that then India will become the true power in the world, not by just, you know, an external, outer repetition of the same thing. External has done its task of faithfully preserving a deep truth. Now the time has come, because that time India was under the spell of aliens, so it had to preserve the truth. So what did the alien ruler say? Oh, what is this? They are worshipping some idol and all that. They didn't really understand. The deep mystic truth was preserved. It has done its work. Now it is time to recover. You know, I'll close with this story, very interesting, about preserving the truth and the mystic. This aliens coming and, you know, what is this? Fools, they are worshipping many gods, goddesses. They didn't know the secret. And it was good, because if they knew the secret, barbaric, what would have happened? So one of my friends, he went to Iran many years back, decades back. So he was carrying with him a copy of the Bhagavad Gita and a picture of Uma Parvati. Shiva and Parvati. So they checked his baggage. The moment they saw Gita, they threw it into the fire. Then they took the photo. He directly told me, this is not a WhatsApp story. Huh? So they asked him, who are they? He said, my parents. He had understood. Now they are looking at Shiva with a snake. This is strange parents. Strange parents. Then he let it go. That's how they, because they don't understand what kind of parent. But he couldn't carry Shiva and Parvati, who must have felt amused from the mountaintops. So the point is that this was needed to preserve a truth as it went down. Now we have entered an age when these truths must be released, not only intellectually, symbolically, but in our real life. So Mahalakshmi Puja is not only one day. Mahakali Puja is not only one day. Durga Puja is not only one day. Maheshwari not only one day. Saraswati Puja not only one day. Our whole life must become, as Shurbindu says, may our entire life become a ceaseless worship of the Divine Mother. Hamara sara jivan hi anirvichhin Durga Puja ho. So may we worship her at every moment of her life, and express her in life, action, speech. That is true worship, and that is the demand of the Divine Mother upon us in this age of truth. Thank you. Namaste.